Sometimes I don't know how I'm gonna do it. Ahead there's a storm, I don't see a way through it. But I still believe that this too shall pass. If there's a ceiling, I'm breaking the glass. If there's a ceiling, I'm breaking the glass.
Hello and welcome back to Our Time Now. As we finished episode 3, I asked you to think about your own life, your own stories. And the reason? Because in today's episode, I'm going to talk to you about writing a book. Now, there are several reasons why writing a book is a good idea, and here are just a few. Firstly, it's an incredible hobby. You know, there are lots of people who have written books, and I don't just mean they've started, I'm talking about completed projects. Some people have even produced more than one book, yet no one has ever read them apart from the author, and probably never will. Think of someone that sits and completes a large, complex jigsaw puzzle. Once completed, they might sit and look at it for a while, but then they dismantle it and put the pieces back in the box. The enjoyment was in the act of putting it together, not looking at it completed. The same thing goes for doing a crossword or word search. Two of the most successful toys to ever be sold, Lego and Meccano. Ah, but you might say, I don't have a story. My life has not been interesting, or at least wouldn't be interesting enough to write a book about it. And I'm not an expert in anything, so I've got nothing to say that someone else would want to read. So my first question to you is, can you read? And then my second question is, if you could learn about anything, what would it be? Do you have an interest, even if you're not an expert? Maybe it's history, geography, medicine, a famous person, science, art, cars, animals, buildings, the royal family, film stars, food and drink, clothing and fashion, technology, music. The list goes on. The point is, you might think that your life is boring. Okay. But what about, for instance, the jockey Lester Piggott, or Sir Tom Jones, or the politician Harold Wilson? Or, looking at it from another angle, the history of Thatchers. No, I don't mean Margaret and Dennis, nor do I mean the cider brewing company. I mean the men who traditionally put thatched roofs on houses. What did they use? Where did those materials come from? Where did they learn? Who still does it? And what does it cost? Do you know? Well, if you don't, you could start a project to learn. You can research it. Libraries have books. Well, there's a clue, by the way. On almost everything. And if you don't want to leave the house, well, you can use the internet. Write it down, take notes, study. And once you've got that raw data, you can start to compile it into sections. Those sections become chapters. So what's your next objection going to be? There's no point because people have already done it? Let me ask you another question. How many books have been written on fishing, golf, clay pigeon shooting? How many on Sir Winston Churchill or baking or Jaguar cars? Is it 2, 3? Because if it's more than 10, then your argument does not hold water. I know people that have lots of books on the same thing. Each book may be on the same subject, but the style of writing and the way the facts are presented makes each one unique. if a new book came out to help high handicap amateur golfers to sink more putts or hit the ball further, there would 100% be people out there that would buy it. When you watch television and they talk to a historian, they are just talking to somebody that's picked a subject and researched it. That's how they became an expert. Well, you could do that. Now, you could do it purely as a hobby for your own interest. Research, then write a book, put it on your bookshelf, and then do the same thing on a different subject or something similar. You could write a series of books on each member of a pop group, such as John Paul, George and Ringo, or maybe Formula One racing drivers from the 1970s. Do it for your own amusement. When I started this podcast, I mentioned a young man that made his first million in his 20s. And at the time, he was a dustbin man working in Nottinghamshire. He learned how to make a website. Then he researched products that people might want to buy. And he didn't have just one website. He made several. Some did nothing. Some did a lot of business, and the rest was a bit of a mixed bag. He didn't invent new products. He just sold the same things other people were selling. But he found that some people liked his website better than others. Did everyone like his website? No. But enough people did. Enough people liked what he was saying more than the other websites, so they bought stuff from him. Look, if you wrote a book about Jack Russell dogs, would it be the best book ever written? Probably not. Would some people like your book better than other books written on Jack Russells? Yes, they would, because we don't all like the same things. A new film comes out and people go to the cinema and watch it. Some will really enjoy it. Some will say it's rubbish. Either way, they all bought a ticket. So a book written by you will be enjoyed by someone, and they're the ones that matter. So you can research the same subject that other people have researched, and your book will be different to theirs. Or you can write about things from your life, or work, or family, or you can create something that is complete fiction. Then it's truly unique, and yours will be the only one. You can make up a story about ghosts or aliens, or it could be a book aimed at kids. I don't know, maybe a story about a talking puppy. So you can write books as a hobby. You can write a book to preserve your own family's history. Write books to make money. Write books to entertain people. Write books to become an expert. And you can also write books to express strongly held views and beliefs. You might even write something technical if you've got that knowledge. It could be carpentry or furniture restoration, or, I don't know, the mechanical info for an MGB midget. Another reason to write is a form of therapy. Maybe you've had experiences in your life such as abuse, addiction, hate, loss of a loved one, feelings of guilt. They're all issues that can be hard to talk about. Yet once you do, it means you're no longer carrying a burden in silence, or it may bring you a sense of closure, even if no one else reads those words but you. You know, younger people can be impulsive. Social media's given them the opportunity to say things publicly that they might not say to someone's face, but they'll say it online, and that's not good. Being older and hopefully a little wiser, I've written things, but then I've deleted it so that the words were never seen. But I've still got those negative feelings out of my system. And that's therapy. So where do we start? Well, a good place is at the end. Let's assume for a moment that you've got an idea for something that you want to write. As an example, you'd like to write about caravanning. Before you start writing, is it intended to be read by someone or not? If it is, who? Where will they read it? In a book? A magazine? Downloaded onto a Kindle? On a website or in a newsletter? Once you have an idea of who will read it and where, then you'll have an idea of the best format for your words. What tone would it take? Would it sound formal, like a headmaster teaching a class? Or casual, like two friends chatting over a cup of coffee? Would it be serious or humorous? Dramatic or inspirational? Because that choice is yours. What length will it be? How many words? Will it have a timeline? So is the story set over a day, or a week, or a year, or 10 years, or an entire lifetime? You see, once you know that, you can start to plan your content. You can start to build a framework or chapters. Make some notes. In chapter one, I want to talk about this. Chapter two, I'll be talking about this. Then chapter three, and you know, so on and so on. It can sometimes help to write a preface. Give yourself 100 words approximately to briefly describe the whole story. You might say something like, Billy was 5 years old when he got his first proper two-wheeled bicycle. And from a wobbly start, he soon began to love the freedom of cycling around the park. As he grew, his mum suggested that he should join the local cycling club, where he was soon taking part in local cycle races against adults. And on one of those road races, he was spotted by an official of the national cycling team, who invited Billy to try out for the Team GB squad. The story follows his journey from child to becoming an Olympic medalist. Right, so that was about 100 words. But you now have a start, a middle, and an end. You have a timeline. So now it's easier to plan what each chapter will cover. Okay, so we understand the basics. Find something that you will enjoy writing about. It's much harder to write about things that you aren't really interested in. I mean, it's certainly not impossible, though. Then plan out the start, middle, and end. Get an idea of the timeline so it makes sense to the reader. And here's a tip. Use a pen and a piece of paper, even if the book itself will be created on a computer. There's something about the act of writing it down that really helps. So now what we need is the platform. So let's assume you've got a computer program on your PC, your laptop, your tablet, or even on your smartphone. And it could be any word processing software. Or you can go straight to my preferred option, which is Amazon KDP. Now, KDP stands for Kindle Direct Publishing. I'll just add a thought here, because I don't have a crystal ball. I can't predict the future. So when you hear this in the future, if KDP isn't still around, well, something else will be. But for now, let's assume it is. Here we go then. Open up your laptop or whatever. Connect to the internet and go to Google and type Amazon KDP. And you'll see Kindle Direct Publishing. And look down the list and there's a heading that says Create a KDP account. Click it. And you'll get two options. Either you have an Amazon account or you don't. So I'll assume that you don't. So it says go to KDP, and that bit is colored blue. That means it's an active link, so you can click on it. And you should find yourself then on the main page where you either sign in or join KDP. So let's click on join KDP. Now it's going to ask you your name, email address, and ask you to make up a password. Obviously, if you don't have an email address, you need to get one. Just go to Google, it will help you, usually with a free Gmail account. They work. There's plenty of others though. So, having entered your name and your email address and created a password, KDP will send you an email. So, I just did that and they sent me a code 275613. I'll put that in the box where it says enter security code, then click the yellow button that says create your Amazon account. You then get a massive page of terms to read, but you might as well just go to the bottom of the page and click agree, or you won't go any further anyway. Now then, to get paid, they need your bank details. You can always open a new bank account online. But for now though, let's just start creating a book. You can decide later about selling it and getting paid. So there's a yellow button with a plus symbol and the word create. So go ahead and click it. And then you have some options such as create a Kindle ebook, a paperback, or a hardcover. So let's do a Kindle ebook. Click on that one. And then there'll be three tabs: details, content, and pricing. So give your book a title and then put your name as the author. Or you could make up a nom de plume or pen name, a fake name if you don't want to use yours. And if this is a joint effort, maybe between family members, you can add them as contributors. Now, the fairly important bit, describe your book. If you do decide to publish your book and put it up for sale, people will read your description and then they can decide if your book sounds interesting enough to bother reading. So it's like your advert to sell your book. There's a link saying, how do I format the description? If you move your mouse pointer over it, another box appears and it offers to show you the book description guide. Click on that link and there's lots of useful info. Then it's really just a case of following the guidance on the web pages. You can do as much or as little as you want, then click the save button. Maybe you'll add some more info every day, once a week, or whenever you feel like it. It'll probably be confusing if I keep telling you what to do from here, as KDP already helps you as you go along. So follow along, take your time, and have fun. At some point, you'll decide whether to publish your work or just to keep it for yourself, but do what feels right for you. And I think we'll leave book writing for now. I may come back to that subject if enough people ask me to. But I also said I would talk a little bit about fibromyalgia, didn't I? Right, well, fibro is classed as a chronic condition, which means that it persists over a long period or goes but keeps coming back. Although in the overwhelming majority of cases with fibromyalgia, it never goes away. The exact cause is still unknown, which also means they haven't found a cure for it yet. Symptoms, well, they can be all or some of the following. You get pain in your muscles and soft tissue that's often worse in cold or damp conditions. What's really annoying is that the pain can seem to move. One minute it's in your shoulders, then it's in your legs, then it's in your arms, then it's back in your shoulders again, and so on. And at one time, doctors didn't even consider it as a real issue because they put it down as an imagined illness. because it didn't make sense. Sufferers also experience fatigue and, to make matters worse, insomnia. Imagine being absolutely shattered and you can't sleep. And when you do finally drop off from exhaustion, you're woken up by pain in your legs again. And that exhaustion and constant pain often leads to depression because there doesn't seem to be a cure. Painkillers are only mildly effective, so do doctors increase your dosage on medication that is known to be addictive. Another symptom is referred to as brain fog, when you just can't focus or you have trouble with simple tasks. You forget common words or find yourself doing what many of us do anyway, go into another room to do something, then you can't remember what it was that you went there to do in the first place. But fibro sufferers do that more often. It seems to affect women more than men, but that's not an exclusivity. Doctors believe it's caused by chemicals in the brain, but as yet, they aren't sure which ones. Now, my wife has been suffering with fibromyalgia for a long time. Despite a regime of seriously strong tablets, she still has constant pain. The only thing that we can do is to help reduce the amount. And I've found two things that have worked for her. Number one was hemp patches. I should say three things really, because she's also got some hemp gel. Looks like a tube of toothpaste. But hemp patches, very thin patches that you apply over the area that hurts, such as muscles in your back or shoulder or legs. And the patches are sticky, just like putting on a plaster on a graze. These reduce the pain enough to know that they've worked. But the biggest effect came from another product that I found online. I'd seen a product advertised that seemed too good to be true. And of course, it was. I was already very sceptical, but when someone you love is in pain, you'll try anything if it'll help. So I purchased this Kalo thing through Amazon. And I used Amazon because I've never had a problem returning an item for a full refund in the few occasions that I've needed to. So this device, if you can call it that, was a rectangular metal plate supposedly impregnated with nanotechnology that affects the electrical signals in the nerves. From my studies as a hypnotherapist, I understand how the brain works. Pain is an electrical signal sent from the affected area to the brain. The brain receives the signal, understands the message, and it returns that electrical impulse, like creating a loop. It's like stubbing your toe. The toe tells the brain, I've been hurt. And the brain says, yes, I hear you. The problem with fibromyalgia is the muscles aren't necessarily hurt, but they're still sending signals to the brain. The leg says, I hurt, and the brain confirms, message received. The opposite is a condition called CIP, or congenital insensitivity to pain. Now that can have some dire consequences because the body gets injured, but no message is sent to the brain. So as an extreme example, somebody could be sitting by an open coal fire reading a book. A piece of coal falls out of the fire into the hearth and their trouser leg catches fire and their leg is burning, but they don't know until they see the smoke. That just shows the relationship between the signals sent to the brain or not. So with fibro, if you can shut off those false signals, you can stop or certainly drastically reduce the pain. And I found something that works. It's called ActiPatch. It's a plastic coated like wire loop with a tiny battery in it. Switch it on and an electrical pulse goes round and round the loop. Now it's not like a TENS machine that sends a jolt to the skin. Instead, the ActiPatch is held by sticky tape to the affected area, such as the back or the leg, and the pulse going round and round, it kind of drowns out the pain signal, effectively turning it off, or at the very least, turning the volume right down. When she first put it on, my wife wasn't sure if it would work. I seem to remember that the instructions said it can take 2 or 3 hours for it to take effect. What I can tell you is she now cannot live without them. Each one lasts for 30 days, working 24 hours a day. She just removes it when she's having a shower, but soon gets it back on again. You can buy a version that lasts just 7 days if you just want to try it. And then the monthly ones can be bought for about £28 online. But make sure you shop around though, because I've seen the same one sold for £25.99 and then somebody else is selling the same thing for £45.99. Now, very recently I've also seen a similar product advertised and it was called the KT Recovery Plus Wave. And recently it was on sale at Boots Online for less than £20. And that will also last your 30 days, so it's definitely worth a try. So if you or someone you know is a fibro sufferer, please do try it. Not everyone knows about these devices, including doctors and healthcare professionals, so that's why they may not have recommended one to you. But we definitely do. Why suffer if you don't have to? That's what I think anyway. And that's it for today's episode. As always, thank you for joining me. A big thank you to those of you that have subscribed. This podcast can be found on various platforms, so wherever you listen, just know that I really appreciate you. Bye for now. Thank you.